You are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening, and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Wednesday, February 13th, and the Celtics, an awful traveling call, and who would you rather see? This is your boy, Matt Shook, a sports writer here in the Motor City, covering the NBA for the Associated Press and the Detroit News, a Pistons fan and follower my whole life, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Thanks for spreading the word about the show. Huge numbers this month with the trade deadline, and they continue with the Pistons winning ways, and also because you guys just love hearing my voice in your earballs every single day, and who can blame you? Tonight we're going to look ahead to the game against the Celtics, which is in Beantown, closing out the first half of the season. I guess the pre-All-Star break portion of the season is a better way of putting it. We're clear two-thirds of the way into the season already. We're also going to talk about possible first-round opponents for the Pistons, and I know we're jumping the gun a little bit. We haven't qualified for the playoffs or anything yet here in this city, but Boston is certainly one of those teams that the Pistons could line up against in the first round if they make the playoffs. We're also going to recap the silliness that has been the NBA over the last 24 hours with the Pistons and Bradley Beal and Blake Griffin and that traveling call where Beal walked home to St. Louis during a drive to the hole on Monday night at Little Caesars Arena. The Twitter war, the NBA referee's official account gets in there, and a referee executive gets in there as well. Just good times for the NBA officials. But anyway, give me a follow on Twitter, by the way, at Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that, and also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. Check us out on Facebook as well. Need those Facebook numbers to get up to the Twitter numbers. We know you guys are on Facebook too, so give us a like on the page at Locked On Pistons-MattShook as well. A little tease as well. We've got an interview coming up with Mason, public address announcer and Detroit radio icon. That's coming up next week during the All-Star break. Already got that one in the bag. We talk about the origins of Mason in the public address chair at the Palace and now Little Caesars Arena, how Detroit basketball came about, and just some good inside stories from Mason. I was at the studio at 105.9 on Tuesday afternoon, hung out with him for a couple hours, had a good time talking hoops in between his radio segments there. I've interviewed and covered all sorts of athletes. I covered the Olympics and Michael Phelps. I covered A-Rod when I was still in college. I interviewed Sidney Crosby one-on-one when I was a young Cub reporter for the Port Huron Times Herald. But I got to say, I was actually nervous to introduce myself to Mason. Fangirled out a little bit there, and not because of his Pistons stuff, not because he was in some ways the national voice of the Pistons' 04 championship run, but just before that, when I was a teenager in the formative years, because I listened to Mason in the morning every day on WJLB, heading to junior high basketball practices with my slow jams, getting me ready for those 7 a.m. practices at Churchill Junior High School, or also driving to Kimball as well when I was in high school, making sure I wasn't too late for first hour so I could just plop down on the desk and take a nap there in first hour. But it's really nice to spend some time with Mason on Tuesday. Excited to share that interview with you guys early next week during the All-Star break. But more pressing matters for now. Nothing more pressing than Mason in the long term here at the Locked On Pistons podcast. But for now, the Pistons will play the Celtics on Wednesday night. This is the final game before the All-Star break. Detroit enters on a 4-game winning streak, trying to make it 5 in a row and also 6 out of 7 to enter the All-Star break on a winning note. The Pistons will not play another regular season game until a week from Friday. That's February 22nd when they're going to be at Atlanta. So I'm talking about, what, nine days without a game for the Pistons after that? I guess eight days without a game. My math is a little bit off, as it always is if you're a listener of the show. But February 22nd, so the Sunday night game with Blake Griffin and the All-Star game on Sunday night will not be another Pistons game until Friday night. So hence, we're putting some stuff in the bag with that Mason interview. The Pistons come into this game tonight at 26-29 in the 8th spot of the Eastern Conference playoffs, 1 game ahead of the Miami Heat. The Boston Celtics got off the schneid a little bit with a win on Tuesday night at Philadelphia, 112-109. The Seas were without Kyrie Irving, but they broke a 2-game losing streak anyway. Boston will be coming in with a 3-5 record on Sega Babas, which are the internet term an acronym for second game of a back-to-back, one of my favorite internet acronyms out there. So again, Boston comes in on the second game of a back-to-back at 3-5 on the season, including a loss earlier this season at Detroit in that same scenario. The Pistons, on the other hand, against opponents coming in to the game on the second half of a back-to-back consecutive days with games, the Pistons are 3-1 in that scenario with against tired teams. So the numbers line up a little bit if you were thinking about throwing some dough on the Pistons tonight. But on Tuesday, the Celtics were without, as we mentioned, Kyrie Irving and also former Piston Aaron Baines. No word on if either will be available yet. I guess we'll check the report, as Jim Caldwell will say, at 1:30. I will pass that along on Twitter for you guys this afternoon. However, I would guess, given that they get the All-Star break and the big break coming up, I don't think there's any reason for them to rush anyone back from an injury when you got 9 days off coming up after that. But Gordon Hayward has led the team in scoring over the past two games, in each of the past two games. He's perked up a little bit for the Celtics lately, but he's done that a couple times this season. The question is, will he be able to sustain that kind of thing for the Celtics, who are, you know, obviously a playoff team looking to make a deep playoff run this spring? Hayward, by the way, keeping in mind another thing to think about today is that he has sat on the second half of back-to-back games three times this year out of the Boston's eight so far scenarios for there. So, you know, worth noting, and I'm not sure how big the All-Star break coming up impacts that kind of thing and how likely Brad Stevens might or might not be to sit out guys like him or in some of the other players that played heavy minutes on Tuesday night before traveling home from Philadelphia back to Boston. But Hayward played 28 minutes off the bench on Tuesday and had a big game with over 20 points. And all the starters from Tuesday's game played 30 minutes or more for the Celtics as well. That's Marcus Morris, Jason Tatum, Al Horford, Terry Rozier, and Marcus Smart. By the way, Jaylen Brown, now coming off the bench for Boston, he struggled earlier this season. He did start the first 19 games of the year and has been mostly a player off the bench since then for Boston. Speaking of lines, I can't find any odds right now for the game with Irving out, but we'll update that on Twitter once we know something. But look, and there's a lot of noise out there about the Celtics right now. Kyrie Irving, how he relates to the young guys, Brad Stevens catching a little bit of heat. We'll talk about that here in a little bit, but I'm still not worked up about this. I'm really not. I feel like the Celtics are still the team to beat in the East. Like Ric Flair says, you got to beat the man. You got to beat the man or something. Woo! Well, anyway. Lord knows I'm old school with all this stuff as I give the Ric Flair reference there. But the team that went to Game 7 in the Eastern Conference Finals without Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving last year is still the team that I'm going with at the end of the day until proven otherwise. I know Vegas and a lot of you guys voting on my Twitter poll online are going to go with Milwaukee and Philly, and for very good reason, of course. Great teams so far this year. A scary starting five in Philadelphia, no doubt. But for teams like this, for Boston, I just feel like a lot of this first half of the season, pre-All-Star game, bluster, it's just a lot of noise. I mean, come playoffs, I think everyone knows what time it is, especially when you got a well-respected coach, a leader who's won championships or a championship with Cleveland, just you know, guys that are hungry for whatever it is, whether even that's a new contract or their free agency or whatever it is they got coming up in their careers. I just feel like people fall in line and that things will work out for the Celtics in the long run. But along those lines, up next I want to talk about who do you think is going to win the East. It's a poll I put up a few days ago, but also my new poll on the Lockdown Pistons Twitter account. Who do you want the Pistons to play in the playoffs if given a choice between the top four Eastern Conference contenders, of which the Boston Celtics are one? But by the way, when you get in your car, you go ahead and buckle your seatbelt, first of all. But after that, tell your smart speaker device or tell your smart device to play podcast Locked on Pistons. Get your newest episode on the way to the gym, on the way to work, on the way to soccer practice, wherever you drive these days. It's your business wherever you drive, but it's my business if you go ahead. See what I did there? If you go ahead and tell your smart device to play podcast Locked on Pistons. But we also have an important favor to ask you while we're getting personal about where you go every day in your car. Also want to let you know where you should go online. We would like your help. We have put together a survey so we can learn more about listeners like you and make your favorite Locked on podcasts even better, if that's possible. This is your opportunity to tell us what you like and tell us what you don't like. It should take about 15 minutes to complete, and by participating, you are entering the chance to win a $250 Vivid Seats gift card. Just visit LockedOnPodcast.com/survey to participate. Again, that's LockedOnPodcast.com/survey. We appreciate your feedback.
Yes, sir!
All right, a little bit later on, we're going to get into RefGate, Twittergate, Travelgate, whatever you want to call it, with Bradley Beal and Blake Griffin spilled over into some social media ridiculousness. Always good for some content on a light day otherwise. But by the way, Avery Bradley, now playing for the Memphis Grizzlies, had a good game on Tuesday night, if you can believe that. 31-6-6, or maybe it was 33 points, 6 rebounds and 6 assists. A career high for him as Memphis lost to San Antonio. But Avery Bradley, 15 of 21 from the field, just his second game with the Memphis Grizzlies. His season high this year with the Clippers was 16. He didn't even score 30 at all in a game last year with Detroit or the Clippers. I think the previous season career high was 31 with Boston, but a long career, and picked up 33 in his second game with Memphis. Might be a fantasy basketball ad, by the way. Mike Conley didn't play. You know, someone's got to score on that team. No Gasol there now. Just a horrific team the rest of the way, no doubt about that. But his former team, well, I guess both of his former teams are part of the discussion here, as we want to talk about who do you want to play in the first round if you're the Detroit Pistons? I put that question out there. First of all, I put the question out there, who will win the East? Now, I took the top four contenders in the East. I know that the Indiana Pacers are the fifth team in this group as a guaranteed playoff team, basically. And up until Victor Oladipo's season-ending injury this season, he would have been in this kind of discussion, but we're going to knock the Pacers out. I always love to give disrespect to the Pacers here, and we're going to continue that theme here. But who will win the East was the first question I asked. The second one is, who do you want to play in the first round if you are the Pistons? Who do you think they have an actual chance to beat in the first round? And the other question is, are those two questions different questions? Now, it comes down to matchups and also what you project to happen throughout the rest of the Eastern Conference. But for the first question, who will win the East? I put that one out to Twitter last week and got 67 votes. 45% of you said that it's going to be the Milwaukee Bucks, 27% the Toronto Raptors, and 21% to the Philadelphia 76ers, and just 7% to the Boston Celtics. So the Celtics were clear fourth in that race there. And so according to the votes on Twitter, a distant fourth of teams that will win the Eastern Conference of those teams is the Boston Celtics. Now tonight, a little while ago, I put this up, already got 53 votes on the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. You can vote on this till about midnight tonight on Wednesday. But of those four teams, who do you think the Pistons would have the best chance up against in a playoff series of giving them a chance? Now, we're not expecting them to win, but just putting up a fight, with the other caveat that you could also vote for, all four would absolutely be a sweep, and we got four additional votes for just the absolutely a sweep, no chance of winning any of these games. But the Boston Celtics were the first in this one also with 57% of the votes. So 57% of the voters think that the Boston Celtics would be the team most susceptible to a, you know, whatever you want to call it, whether it's a decent series or maybe the Pistons can go get one game against them, or maybe you're optimistic and thinks it goes seven, or even you think they might be able to win a first-round series against the Boston Celtics. Following up after that, the Sixers, 21%, the second team that the Pistons might have a shot of making it a decent series against, the third being the Raptors at 13%, and the 9%, the fourth-place team being the Milwaukee Bucks. So really does mirror the same reverse order of the first question I asked there. So really kind of wanted to highlight the disrespect out there, and rightfully so, with the way things are going, with the Kyrie Irving controversy, with the Boston Celtics out there. The 7% of you think that the Boston Celtics are going to win the Eastern Conference, and 57% of you think that of those four teams, the Boston Celtics could be the team that the Pistons could have the best chance against out of those. Now, I know the Pistons got the win against the Celtics this year in the second half of their back-to-back at home. They also put up a decent fight against the Celtics in their first game in Boston this season. The Pistons did get trounced in their first game in Detroit against the Celtics this year. I think that was their first loss of the season, by the way. But just an interesting way of kind of framing where we look at the Boston Celtics and what we think about this team right now. Now, as far as who will win the East, now you guys know, if you listen to the podcast, that I talked about how the Boston Celtics are going to win the NBA championship this year. They are going to beat the Golden State Warriors in the finals. But if you listen to this show, you also know that I tend to change my predictions sometimes. But I got to stick with that as far as Boston winning the title this year, because you know in the odd chance that that actually happens, and I don't believe that's actually going to happen now, if you put a gun to my head, and please don't put a gun to my head. But of course you know that if the Celtics win this championship, I'm gloating. I'm saying before this season started, I said the Celtics are going to win the title, so you know, eat it. So that's my great prediction, and you didn't make it. So I'm a better man, better basketball fan than you guys are. But of course, just be kind of hot air gloating. But I guess right now, given what we've seen, you know, a lot of you guys think the Bucks are the team to beat in the East. Again, rightfully so. I think that it is these Philadelphia 76ers is the team to beat in the East right now. Those five guys. The fearlessness that Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons and Jimmy Butler have, and what the shooting that Tobias Harris adds to an already dangerous J.J. Redick, the home court advantage that the Philadelphia 76ers have, the way that they played in the playoff series against Boston last year, giving them a really tough second-round matchup, getting a win in the first round against Miami. These guys aren't completely unbattle-tested. You know, they are as a unit, but when you add Jimmy Butler, you add Tobias Harris to that team, I just think that it's really not even that big of a question to me that the Philadelphia 76ers are really the team to beat in the Eastern Conference. Now, again, I said last segment about the Celtics being the team to beat given that they're top seven and everything like that. And again, I got to go with them because they're my original pick. But as far as the first round team that the Pistons could knock off, and again, you don't want to put too much emphasis on the fact that the Pistons do have a win on the road against the Toronto Raptors this year. You know, Stanley Johnson is gone. He was kind of a catalyst of stopping Kawhi Leonard in that matchup earlier this season. And James Edwards III, we were chatting after the game, after the Pistons knocked off Washington on Monday night, that who's going to guard Kawhi? Who's going to guard Giannis? Who's going to guard even Jason Tatum? So those kind of those unicorn type of guys, especially Giannis in that category, but Kawhi Leonard being a swing man who's got some decent size for a guy on the wing and can do it all. You can throw Giannis in that group too, and Jason Tatum to a lesser extent as a second-year player in this league. The Pistons don't really have that guy that can match up with any of those players. So in that mind, maybe, you know, the Sixers might be a decent matchup, as Tobias Harris isn't going to expose you as much as maybe those other three guys will, as you know, prototypical big small forwards, so to speak. But to me, if I'm and again, we throw the Indiana Pacers out of this discussion. If I'm hoping for a first round matchup, and you would hope certainly that Indiana would be that team if you had a choice, I'm going to go ahead and say that it would be the Toronto Raptors, just because I feel like this is a team that imploded in the playoffs over the last few years. And I know that they you know, extinguished a lot of that roster, extinguished what they thought was a big problem with the coach. But obviously you're getting into a visceral level in terms of the motivation that you're giving to the Detroit Pistons and Dwayne Casey and the players on this team that respect and like him. You got a first-year head coach in Nick Nurse. And I know I disrespected the Toronto Raptors in the preseason and the lead-up to the season as well, and I've kind of been proven wrong in a regular season sense so far. But I'm still going to throw a little bit of shade at Toronto, a little bit of disrespect at the Raptors. I don't see Marc Gasol as a guy who's going to expose Andre Drummond as much as a Joel Embiid would out there. And, you know, we'll see. Obviously, it's a good problem to have if you're the Pistons. You're looking ahead to a possible first-round playoff appearance. And what team would you rather see? But like I said, got some time to vote on that Lockdown Pistons Twitter poll of what team would you rather play in the first round? Who do you think that the Pistons could give the first or the best playoff series to, whether that's whatever your level of the best is compared to those other teams, whether that's winning a game, winning a couple games, stretching to seven, or even having a chance. And like I said, favorite the tweet if you think it's an absolute no-brainer that the Pistons are going to get swept by all those teams. But that's my picks there. But is your company looking for a new way to reach customers? Your company could be mentioned right here, right now on Locked On Pistons. Podcast listeners are 60% more likely to interact with sponsors that they hear on their favorite podcast. Our demo is 98% males with more education and more earning power than traditional media audiences. So have your company sponsor Locked On Pistons. Go ahead and email me at Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more. Up next, we're going to talk about Travelgate, however you want to call it, with Bradley Beal and Blake Griffin getting into the action on Twitter. That's up next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast, which is a proud member of the Locked On Network, your team every day. All right, you've seen it, and if you know me, this is one of those get-off-my-lawn moments, as the viral moments. We got to talk about these sometimes on the Locked On Pistons podcast. And you knew we'd talk about this one, as I was at the game Wednesday, Monday night, so saw it on the big screen when they showed the replay. Bradley Beal driving baseline on Blake Griffin, takes his two steps, and before he goes up for the shot, he kind of mishandles the ball a little bit, and then regathers, takes another couple steps, and then passes the ball out to a teammate. Now, of course, they showed it on the big screen on the replay. Even Wojo sitting next to me knows that that is a travel, absolutely. And, we all kind of laugh, and it went around Twitter late on Monday night and early into Tuesday morning, nationally, really, about how is the NBA not calling this travel? Guy took, you know, his 2.5 steps and then took two more steps. But the unasked for, the NBA, this isn't like the last 2 minutes report where they got a report on this kind of stuff. The Twitter account of official NBA refs, so this is like the NBA referees official Twitter account, and obviously there, but stating the obvious, but went on to say that it quote tweeted a complex sports tweet where they're making fun of it, and says that the offensive player gathers with his right foot on the ground. He then takes two legal steps before losing control of the ball. After regaining possession, a player is allowed to regain his pivot foot and pass or shoot prior to that foot returning to the ground. This is legal. So basically saying, if you lose the ball and reestablish it and re-grab it, you have now reestablished a new pivot foot, and that pivot foot just can't touch the ground before you get rid of the ball. Went on to not only do that, but did like a touchdown dance and replied to its own tweet and put in its tweet that tagging Jalen Rose and Mike Greenberg and our own Greg Kelser of the telecast, who was on there, obviously reacting to it as they showed the replay, going crazy about that wasn't a travel. And then the Twitter account then reacted again, saying after all the negative feedback it got from the original tweet, said, well, that escalated quickly. When we talk about losing control, quote, we're talking about, quote, a fumble. Below is the fumble rule. It is legal for a player to fumble even without a defender touching the ball, then reestablish possession and his pivot foot. So kind of reacting to all the people that might have thought that because the ball wasn't knocked away and it was lost by its own player, you can't. People were arguing that you can't do that and just get two more steps after that. Went on to say, fumble equals legal and no travel. No fumble equals travel. It's understandable for people to think that the offensive player doesn't lose control and therefore travels, but the officials on the floor deemed it a fumble and therefore legal. This is what makes this job so difficult. That was what my argument is with the whole thing, is that if you watch the play, Bradley Beal doesn't all-out fumble the ball. He just kind of loses control for half a second, and it goes from one hand to the other. It's not like a full loss of possession of the ball. And I know that we're kind of treading into some of the same water from the Buddy Hield game-winning shot, which was it a double dribble or was it not a double dribble going forward. But after that original tweet, Blake Griffin responded and quote-tweeted the NBA referee's tweet saying, nice try, tagging real deal Bradley Beal there. We know you hacked the ref account and tweeted this. Beal gets in on the action on Twitter saying, LOL, I'm innocent. And then to top it all off, as if this wasn't enough of a black eye, then we have Monty McCutcheon in a story with ESPN.com. Monty is the NBA's vice president of referee development and training, went ahead and disagreed with the original tweet from the official NBA Referees Association Twitter account, saying that it should have been a travel. And quote of McCutcheon in this article saying, while in some cases a fumble at the end of a dribble on the gather can be retrieved, this is not what happened on this play. and see if you can follow with this explanation. I've had a hard time. I got a little headache thinking about this. But Bradley Beal, and this is a quote again, Bradley Beal gathers the ball and takes two steps, but then loses control of the ball. Once he has lost control after taking the two steps, he must regain control and pass or shoot before taking another step in order to be legal. Since he does not regain control until another step, the play is a travel. And again, those last two sentences, been thinking about those for longer than I should have tonight. And it seems that they're confused about the rule, not the interpretation. Again, the NBA referee's official account, giving up kind of a mea culpa to some of those of us, myself included out there, that said that it wasn't really a fumble, is kind of my fundamental disagreement with what they were saying. Now, this is saying that kind of two interpretations, not interpretations, but two disagreements about what the rule is. So again, maybe someone can, in plain English, explain this one to me. Go ahead and leave a voicemail if you want at 810-666-1546 if you're smarter than me and can figure out what this agreement or disagreement is all about between two seemingly on the same sides of this issue with NBA officials. But, you know, we wonder why people think the fix is in, why NBA officials get the bad rep that they do. And, you know, things like this, and although it's mostly lighthearted, it obviously didn't affect the outcome of the game or even the outcome of the betting line. But not a good situation for the NBA refs to go through this like they did on Tuesday afternoon. But again, my head hurts. We're going to wrap the show with that. This is your host, Matt Shook, of the Locked On Pistons podcast. Enjoy the game against Boston tonight. We'll be back with a recap and more tomorrow on the podcast. And enjoy the night, everyone.